Hey, thanks for listening to this mini pod episode of Men of Low Moral Fiber. Just a quick setup and then we'll jump right into it. We were recently talking with our good friend Corrigan Vaughn of Electric Fan Cave about 1992's The Secret of Monkey Island by LucasArts. And our conversation kind of took a turn away from gameplay and went into more of a social awareness, diversity-related topics. So when we edited this episode, we knew we probably weren't going to be able to keep all of it just because it went really, really long. We talked for over an hour, and it just kind of got off topic. It wasn't specifically about the gameplay. So, however, when we got, you know, instead of just getting rid of it, Corey brought up some great stuff. She sparked a really good conversation, we thought. So we just wanted to make sure we published this separately, also in hopes that it would be easier to access if someone just wanted to listen to this part of our conversation. So thanks again for clicking on us. And let me see, context. I think I just mentioned something about the cannibals on Monkey Island, and Corey was about to take it from there.
Since you brought up the cannibals, by the way, I love that the last time that I played this, also, like, it wasn't as clear to me that they were, like, gay.
Yeah.
There's like, oh, there's our gay stereotype cannibals.
A couple stereotypes in this game.
Yep. And you, like, immediately, the first thing they say to Guybrush is, like, is that a banana in your pocket? Or are you just happy to see
and
me?
It's, I was like, it's interesting because I think what they're trying to, the shorthand they're doing is not just gay, but aesthete.
Right.
You know, someone who's really culturally advanced
exactly.
in some way.
Yeah.
Again, doesn't make the stereotyping okay.
No, sure.
But the juxtaposition is, it's funny that these cannibals that you think of as savages are actually, you know, they really care about art, they're really thoughtful,
right.
You know, they've got this.
Yeah.
Take the good with the bad.
Indeed. It's not like horribly over the top or anything like that. It's just one of those things when you play it and you're really thinking about it, you're just like, oh, yeah. Nope, that one went right over my head. Like many things in this
1990.
Game. 1990. When you're a kid playing it, or even like a naive teenager, I guess, is would have been playing it. I'm like, nope, didn't catch that. Even being San Francisco Bay Area kids.
Exactly. And that's where the game came from, too. And I think that speaks more to the time.
Exactly.
And the time and easy laughs and not caring kind
easy
of
laughs,
the ramifications of that.
I think Leisure Suit Larry would have taken a different approach. Boom. Coming at you, Sierra Podcast. We're coming at you.
I like that you mentioned Leisure Suit Larry in your last podcast, too.
No.
Did we really?
I just want you, to talk a little. Like, is this going to be an episode? Are we going to do Leisure Suit Larry here?
Oh, we have to. But I think we need to do it as like an April Fool's joke or something. Gosh, Leisure Suit Larry.
It's a little much. But yeah, just so you know, this is becoming a thing that you reference.
It's my go-to as of terrible game. So
that's understandable.
It's a Sierra game too. So it's like, there's all these amazing LucasArts games, and what was the rest of the world doing? Leisure Suit Larry. That was the pinnacle of everything that wasn't LucasArts.
Wasn't it like?
It was no
Custer's popular,
Revenge.
Though? Like,
I
don't remember it at all.
Very much.
I had to look it up.
Yeah, that's probably for the best.
I have a question.
Yeah, go for it.
Since we started talking about stereotyping and things like that. So the course I'm teaching on video games, this next time I'm teaching it, it has a theme. We're doing it as a theme course on gender and sexuality in video games.
Mm, not loaded at all.
Please don't cough while I'm talking. Right? What happened was last time I taught the class. Thank you.
Jake, what are you? Speak up, Jason.
All right, next question.
Good. What happened was last time I taught the class, it was Gamergate happened.
Oh,
and it was
boy.
Like, I've got to change the entire syllabus and we have to address this. And so it was like the best version of the class ever.
Mm-hmm.
It was timely. The students got really interested in it. And the last assignment was kind of open-ended in terms of how they could critique something. And the students who chose kind of a gender or a sexuality angle did the best on it. So I thought, it's a 2000 level class. I'll just force the students to choose this as their topic, give them a little bit more instruction, and we'll get more out of it rather than leaving it completely open. So all that leads to my question.
Okay.
Corey, I heard a rumor you're a lady. You can give some insight here. I know, right?
Nobody's ever called me a lady in the history of time. But yeah, continue. We'll run with it.
I want to think a little bit about how this game deals with gender. I remember as a kid, totally in love with Carla, in love with Elaine Marley. I hope that in both cases it was because they were strong women. who actually had agency and did
right.
stuff,
yeah.
Or even in Carla's instance, didn't do stuff, and that was her agency,
right.
Which was really fun as well. And I love the twist at the
yeah.
end of her saying, "Oh my gosh, Guybrush, you idiot! I've
yeah.
got this handled. I'm not a damsel in distress."
Yeah.
But what was your take on it, Corey?
Well, that, yeah, I think for me, it's always an interesting thing with a game like this because, for one thing, you do have the fact that there are, you know, multiple sort of strong female characters in it. At the same time, you're following, you know, a white male described as, what does he call him, like Nordic or something in there at some point. You know, you're following around like a very typical sort of game hero in that sense. So you've got kind of back
yeah.
and forth of it being like, yeah, that's cool that there's these women, but still it's this traditional sort of game. But I do think that there's really something to be said about that ending and how, like, sort of, I don't know, I'm trying to think, I don't want to say revolutionary because that overstates it, but just that kind of moment when you realize, like, all of this, everything you've done in this game as this male trying to save this woman and all of this kind of stuff was, like, really pointless because she had it the whole time, you know? Like, she was figuring this out. It was even that we didn't necessarily see her going about getting all of this kind of stuff done. It's the ultimate gotcha mm-hmm. of seeing, like, you thought this
yeah.
guy who had no experience as a pirate and was just, like, gathering up random stuff to try to throw it together and make this work was going to be better than this woman, the governor of this, you know, island, and of, you know, who has all this amazing, you know, background and everything like that. How dare you? How dare you think you were going to do better than she
yeah.
was at
yeah.
this? So I kind of love that moment of being like, yeah, you were kind of a word that's not a swear word. You were kind of a douche nozzle about this.
Twit.
That's it. That's the one.
For
Nailed
thinking
it.
That he needed to
totally.
Come to her aid. So that's one of the things I kind of take from this. It's obviously a game about a guy trying to save the damsel, but at the end of the day, it's kind of a got you to those who thought that, you know, any old random white guy was going to be able to do better than the woman with agency who had been training for this moment her whole life, I guess.
And I think, you know, LucasArts really was progressive in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But there's often some problems with these early games. For example, we played Rebel Assault, and you can choose to be either a male or female. It's great that you've got that choice.
Yeah.
And then they do away with it for Rebel Assault 2. They have I guess, strong female character who's a secondary character. And, of course, without any warning, you make out with the female character at the end.
What?
There's no lead up to it whatsoever. It's
wow.
just, oh, you've won. Now you guys need to kiss because that's what happens when
Here's
you win.
Here's your prize.
Yeah, which is, even
I mean,
in
yeah.
this one, it's so
Weird.
Opposite that because essentially she kind of, like, proposes to Guybrush at the end of
yeah.
this game, you know, like she's even the nudge instigator of that in Monkey Island. So
yeah,
that seems out of nowhere.
Well, and let's look forward. Let's look forward to Monkey Island 2. Monkey Island 2 starts with Guybrush hanging from a rope and with one hand, and with his other hand, he's holding a treasure chest, and Elaine rappels down to go talk to him.
Yeah.
And he says, can you help me up? She goes, no, just tell me the whole story. Tell me what happened. How'd you get here? And just leaves him hanging for the entirety of the game. And the entire thing is a frame narrative
yeah.
as you find out, you know, how did you get to here?
Right. Yeah. And I don't remember that one as well. I'm not going to lie to you, but I love that. I think they were trying to do something with it. And for, you know, the early 90s making games like this, you know, you had like a few years later companies that were coming out specifically with games that they were trying to actively sort of pursue a female audience and build sort
mm-hmm.
of that sense of self in young girls and sense that you can do things and stuff like that. And so for a company that wasn't necessarily actively trying to do that specifically, you know, they weren't a company that was aimed
mm-hmm.
at being like a girls' empowerment company or anything of that nature, that they came out with the stuff, it was clearly important to them because they didn't have to do that, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they weren't just doing it for the joke. The joke wasn't that, you know, Elaine was much stronger than Guybrush was,
right.
you know, it was just sort of a way of, you know, pulling no punches and saying that she was a strong character in her own right. So I don't know. I think for the time that it was made, it was really kind of doing something that I don't remember a lot of other games doing. I remember I had a game called Jill of the Jungle. Did you guys ever play that?
No.
I don't think so.
She was kind of like a Tarzan character, essentially. So she's like swinging around the jungle, beating people up and getting stuff. And, you know, that's one of the few. I also had another game that was like a military flying game. And the pilot in that was a woman whose father had been a pilot before her and things like that. And that's really the only two games I can remember having female leads that I could be like, wow, girls do this stuff too. So I appreciate what meager efforts they were doing.
You're forgetting a little series called Tomb Raider. That was huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm forgetting Tomb
Raider.
I'll
edit this part out. That.
Hey, here's a fun aside on Tomb Raider. Do you know how Lara Croft got her boobs?
Puberty?
Right? One of the designers were playing with the game sprite and fiddling with different things, and the designer was trying to increase the boob size from like 4 to 5, and he accidentally pressed 50. But he did it on an order of 10 so that it was preposterous. Right. And they all looked at it and went, oh my gosh, that's so stupid. And he goes to change it, and somebody literally just pushes him on the shoulder and goes, oh my gosh, leave it in. We're going to sell 1 million copies.
Ta-da!
Which, I mean, is, yeah, they did. That's it worked.
I mean, honestly, if that were not the case, would that game be as popular as it is?
No, not at all.
Probably not.
Okay, thanks for listening. I hope you're able to glean a few insights from that interesting conversation we had. Again, we will be dropping another episode in a couple weeks, so look forward to that. And you can find us at menoflowmoralfiber.com if you have any questions at all.